had because I was different. Maven, who helped kill his own father, who tried to execute his brother. Maven, who must be destroyed. A small part of me fears that Cal will walk away. He could disappear into the city, to find whatever peace still lingers in his heart. But he won't. His anger, while buried deep, is stronger than his own reason. He will have vengeance, just as I will have mine, even if it costs us everything we hold dear. This way. His voice echoes. We have no more time for whispers. As we round the back corner of the security center, my senses reach out, focusing on the security cameras dotting the walls. With a smile, I push against them, shorting out their wiring. One by one, they fall to my wave. The back door is just as impressively made as the front, albeit smaller. A wide step like a porch, a door grated with curving steel, and only four armed guards. Their rifles are polished to a high sheen, but heavy in their hands. New recruits. I note the colored bands on their arms, denoting their houses and abilities. One has no band at all, a lower-class silver, with no great family and weaker abilities than the others. The rest are a Banshee of House Marinos, a Glycon Shiver, and a Greco Strongarm. To my delight, I see no white and black of House Egri, no eyes to glimpse the immediate future, to know what we're about to do. They see us coming and don't bother to straighten up. Reds are nothing to worry about, not for silver officers. How wrong they are. Only when we stop before the steps of the rear door do they notice us. The Banshee, little more than a boy with slanted eyes and high cheekbones, spits at our feet. Keep moving, red rats. His voice has a painful razor edge to it. Of course we don't listen. I would like to lodge a complaint, I say, my voice high and clear, though I keep my face angled to the ground. Heat rises next to me, and out of the corner of my eye I see Cal's fists clench. The officers break out in hearty guffaws, exchanging grotesque smiles. The Banshee even takes a few steps forward until he stands over me. Security doesn't listen to the likes of you. Take it up with the Red Watch. They break out in peals of laughter again. The Banshees hurt my tender ears. I think they're still hanging around. More disgusting laughs. In Stark Garden. Next to me, Farley's hands curl into her jacket to feel the knife she keeps tucked close. I glare at her, hoping to stop her from stabbing someone before the right moment. The steel center door opens, allowing a guard to step out onto the entryway. He mutters to one of the other officers, and I catch the words broken and camera. But the officer only shrugs, darting to look at the many security cameras dotting the wall above us. He doesn't see anything wrong with them. Not that he could. Be gone with you, the Banshee continues, waving a hand like we're dogs to be dismissed. When we don't move, his eyes narrow into thin, black slits. Or shall I arrest you all for trespassing? He expects us to scurry off. Arrest is as good as execution these days. But we hold our ground. If the Banshee wasn't such a cruel idiot, I would feel sorry for him. You can try, I say, reaching for my hood. The shawl falls around my shoulders, flapping like gray wings before crumpling at my feet. It feels good to turn up my gaze and watch cold recognition drop fear across the Banshee's face. I am not remarkable looking. Brown hair, brown eyes, brown skin. Bruised, bone-weary, small and hungry. Red blood and a red temper. I should not frighten anyone, but the Banshee is certainly afraid of me. He knows what power hums beneath my bruises. He knows the Lightning Girl. He stumbles, one foot catching on the steps and falls backward, mouth opening and closing as he summons the strength to scream. It's her! The Shiver behind him stammers, pointing one shaking finger. It quickly turns to ice. I can't help but smile pointedly, and sparks ball in my hands. Their shocking hiss is a comfort like no other. Cal compounds the dramatics. He rips away his disguise in a single smooth motion, revealing the prince they were raised to follow, then told to fear. His bracelet crackles and flame spreads along his shawl, turning it into a blistering, burning flag. "The prince!" the strong-arm gasps. He looks starry-eyed, reluctant to act. After all, until a few days ago, they saw Cal as a legend, not a monster. The Banshee recovers first, reaching for his gun. "Arrest them! Arrest them!" he shrieks, and we duck as one, dodging his sonic blow. It shatters the windows behind us. Shock makes the officers slow and stupid. The strong arm doesn't dare come close and fumbles for his holstered pistols, struggling against his own rushing adrenaline. One of them, the officer standing in the open door, has the good sense to run into the safety of the center. The four remaining are easily dealt with. The Banshee doesn't get the chance for another scream, catching an electric bolt instead. The shocks dig into his neck and chest before finding home in his brain. For a split second, I can feel his veins and nerves splayed like branches in flesh. He drops where he stands, falling into a deep, dark sleep. A breath of biting cold gets the better of me, and I spin to find a wall of ice shards sailing my way, driven by the shiver. They melt before they reach me, destroyed by a blast of Cal's fire. It quickly turns on the shiver and the strong arm, surrounding them both, trapping them so I can finish the job. Two more shocks knock them out, slamming them to the floor. The last officer, the unknown, tries to flee, pawing at the still open door. Farley grabs him around the neck, but he throws her off, sending her flying. He's a Telki, but a weak one, and quickly dispatched. He joins the others on the ground, his muscles twitching slightly from my electric darts. I give the Banshee an extra shock for his malice. His body flops against the steps like a fish from Killorn's nets. All of it takes but a moment. The door is still open, swinging slowly on massive hinges. I catch it before the latch locks in place, forcing an arm into the cool circulated air of the security center. Inside, I feel the rush of electricity, in the lights, in the cameras, in my own fingertips. With a single steadying breath, I shut them all out, plunging the chamber beyond into darkness. Cal steps carefully over the unconscious bodies of fallen officers, while Farley does her best to kick each one in the ribs. "For the watch," she snarls, breaking the Banshee's nose. Cal stops her before she can do any more damage, sighing as he loops an arm around her shoulder, hoisting her up the steps and through the open back door. With one last glance at the sky, I slip into the center and shut the steel firmly behind us. The dark halls and dead cameras remind me of the Hall of the Sun, of sneaking down to the palace dungeons to save Farley and Killorn from certain death. But I was almost a princess there. I wore silk, and I had Julian at my back, singing his way through each and every guard, bending their will to our purpose. It was clean, spilling no blood but my own. The security center is not like that. I can only hope to keep the casualties to a minimum. Cal knows where to go and keeps the lead, but he does nothing more than dodge the officers who try to stop us. For a brute, he's quite graceful, shouldering around blows from strong arms and swifts. He still won't hurt them, and leaves that burden to me. Lightning destroys just as easily as flame, and we leave a trail of bodies in our wake. I tell myself they're only unconscious, but in the heat of battle, I can't be sure. I can't control my surges as easily as I make them, and it's likely I killed one or two. I don't care, and neither does Farley, her long knife plunging in and out of the dark shadows. It drips metallic silver blood by the time we reach our destination, an unremarkable door. But I feel something remarkable within. A vast machine, pulsing with electricity. "Here, the records room," Cal says. He keeps his eyes on the door, unable to look back at our carnage. True to his word, he bathes the surrounding hallway in flame, creating a wall of twisting heat to protect us while we work. We push through the door. I expect mountains of paper, printed lists like the one Julian gave me, but instead, I find myself staring at a wall of flashing lights, video screens, and control panels. It pulses, sluggish from my interference with the wiring. Without a thought, I put a hand to the cold metal, calming myself in my ragged breathing. The records machine responds in kind and kicks into a high whir. One of the screens blinks to life, showing a fuzzy black and white display. Text flits across the screen, drawing a gasp from Farley and me. We've never imagined, let alone seen, anything like this.
Remarkable, Farley breathes, reaching out with a tentative hand.
Her fingers brush along the text on screen, reading slowly. Large letters spell out census and records, with Beacon Region, Regent State, Norta, written in smaller type below. They didn't have this in Courant? I ask, wondering how she found Nix's location in the village. She dully shakes her head. Courant barely has a post office, let alone one of these. With a grin, she clicks one of the many buttons beneath the glowing screen, then another and another. The screen flashes each time, typing out different questions. She giggles like a child, continuing to click. I put my hand over hers. Farley.
Sorry,
she replies. A little help here, Your Highness? Cal doesn't step back from the door, his neck craning back and forth to check for officers.
The blue key says search.
I press the button before Farley can. The screen darkens for a moment before flashing blue. Three options appear, each one inside a flashing white box. Search by name, search by location, search by blood type. Hastily, I hit a button marked select, choosing the first box.
Type in the name you want, then hit proceed. Hit printout. When you find what you want, it'll give you a copy,
Cal instructs. But a shouting curse draws his gaze away, as an officer makes blistering contact with his fiery barricade. A gunshot blasts, and I pity this stupid guard trying to fight fire with bullets.
Quickly now.
My fingers hover over the keys, hunting down each letter as I type out Ada Wallace in frustratingly slow motions. The machine whirs again, the screen flashing three times, before a wall of text appears. It even includes a photograph, the one used on her identification card. I linger on the picture of the new blood, taking in Ada's deep golden skin and soft eyes. She looks sad, even in the tiny image. Another gunshot echoes, making me jump. I turn my focus on the text, skimming through Ada's personal information. Her birthday and birth location I already know, as well as the blood mutation that marks her as a new blood like me. Farley searches too, her eyes scanning over the words with abandon.
There!
I point a finger at what we need, feeling happier than I have in days. Occupation, housemaid, employed by Governor Rem Rombos. Address, Bywater Square, Canal Sector, Harbor Bay.
I know it,
Farley says, jabbing at the printout button. The machine spits out paper, copying down the information from Ada's record. The next name comes even faster from the humming machine. Wolliver Galt, occupation merchant, employed by Galt Brewery. Address, Battle Garden and Charside Road, Three Stone Sector, Harbor Bay. So Krantz wasn't lying about this, at least. I'll have to shake his hand if I ever see him again.
About done?
Cal shouts from the door, and I hear the strain in his voice. It's only a matter of time until nymphs come running, and his flaming wall crashes down.
Nearly,
I murmur, clicking at the keys again. This machine isn't just for Harbor Bay, is it? Cal doesn't respond, too busy maintaining his shield, but I know I'm right. With a grin, I pull the list from my jacket and thumb to the first page. Farley gets started on that screen. She jumps to attention like a rabbit, gleefully clicking until the next panel screen hums to life. We pass the list between each other, typing in name after name, collecting one printout after another. Every name from the Beacon region, all 10 of them. The girl from the Newtown slums, a 70-year-old grandmother in Concorda, twin boys on the Barn Islands, and so on. The papers pile on the floor, each one telling me more than Julian's list ever could. I should feel excited, ecstatic at such a breakthrough, but something throttles my happiness. So many names,
so many to save, and we are moving so slowly. There is no way we'll find them all in time, not like this, not even with the air jet or the records or all of Farley's underground tunnels. Some will be lost. There is no avoiding it. The thought disintegrates just like the wall behind me. It explodes inward in a cloud of dust, silhouetting the jagged figure of a man with gray, rocky flesh, hard as a battering ram. Stone skin is all I manage to think before he charges, catching Farley around the waist. Her hand still clutches the line of printouts, ripping the precious paper from the machine. It streams behind her like a white banner of surrender. "Submit to arrest!" The stone skin roars, pinning her against the far window. Her head smacks against the glass, cracking it. Her eyes roll. And then the wall of fire is in the room with us, surrounding Cal as he enters like a mad bull. I snatch the papers from Farley's hand, tucking them away with the list lest they be burned. Cal works quickly, forgetting his oath not to harm, and hauls the stone skin off her, using his flames to force him back through the hole in the wall. The fire rises, stopping him from coming back, for the time being. "Done now," Cal growls, his eyes like living coals. I nod and turn my gaze on the records machine. It whirs, sadly, as if it knows what I'm about to do. With a clenched fist, I overload its circuits, setting a destructive surge shuddering through the machine. Every screen and blinking line explodes in a spray of sparks, erasing exactly what we came for. "Done." Farley stumbles away from the window, a hand to her head, her lip bleeding, but still inexorably standing. "I think this is the part where we run." One glance out the window, the natural escape, tells me we're too high up to jump. And the sounds from the hall outside, shouts and marching feet, are just as damning. Run where? Cal only grimaces, extending a hand toward the polished wood floor. Down. A fireball explodes at our feet. It digs into the wood, charring the intricate designs and the solid base like a dog chewing through meat. The floor cracks in an instant, collapsing under us, and we fall to the room below, and then the next below that. My knees buckle beneath me, but Cal doesn't let me stumble, one hand holding my collar. Then he drags me, never loosening his grip, pulling us toward another window. I don't need to be told what to do next. Our flame and lightning shatter through the thick pane of glass, and we follow, leaping into what I think is thin air. Instead, we land hard, rolling onto one of the stone walkways. Farley follows, her momentum sending her right into a startled guard. Before he can react, she tosses him from the bridge. A sickening smack tells us his fall was not pleasant. "Keep moving," Cal growls, hoisting himself to his feet. In a thunder of feet, we storm across the arched bridge, crossing from the security center to the royal palace of Ocean Hill. Smaller than Whitefire, but just as fearsome, and just as familiar to Cal. At the end of the walkway, a door starts to open, and I hear the shouts of more guards, more officers, a veritable firing squad. But instead of trying to fight, Cal slams against the door, his hands blazing, and welds it shut. Farley balks, glancing between the blocked door and the walkway behind us. It looks like a trap, worse than a trap. "Cal," she begins, fearful, but he ignores her. Instead, he extends a hand to me. His eyes are like nothing I've ever seen. Pure flame, pure fire. "I'm going to throw you," he says, not bothering to sugarcoat a word. Behind him, something shudders against the welded door. I don't have time to argue or even ask. My mind spins, poisoned by terror, but I take his wrist and he grips mine. "Explode when you hit." He trusts me to know what he means. With a grunt, he heaves and I'm airborne, falling toward another window. It gleams and I hope it isn't diamond glass. A split second before I find out, my sparks do as they're told. They obliterate the window in a shriek of glittering glass as I fall through, onto plush, golden carpeting. Stacks of books, a familiar smell of old leather and paper. The musty palace library. Farley slings through the windowpane next. Cal's aim is too perfect, and she lands right on top of me. "Up, ma'," she snaps, almost wrenching my arm out of my socket to get me on my feet. Her brain works faster than mine, and she reaches the window first, her arms outstretched. I mirror her in a daze, my head spinning. Above us, on the bridge, guards and officers flood from both ends. In the center, an inferno blazes. For a moment, it seems still. Then I realize it's coming at us, leaping, lunging, falling. Cal's flames extinguish a moment before he hits the wall and misses the window ledge. "Cal!" I scream, almost diving out myself. His hand brushes through my own. For a heart-stopping second, I think I'm about to watch him die. Instead, he dangles, his other wrist firm in Farley's grip. She roars, her muscles flexing beneath her sleeves, somehow keeping 200 pounds of Prince from falling. "Grab him!" she screams. Her knuckles are bone white. I send a thunderbolt skyward to the bridge, to guards and guns all trained on Cal's form splayed out like an easy target. They cower, and the pieces of the stone crack. Another, and it will collapse. I want it to collapse. "Mare!" Farley shrieks. I have to reach, I have to pull. His hand finds mine, almost breaking my wrist with the effort. But we get him up as quickly as we can, dragging him over the ledge and backward, into disarming silence and a room full of harmless books. Even Cal seems shocked by the ordeal. He lies for a second, eyes wide, breath heavy. "Thanks," he finally grinds out. "Later," Farley snarls. Like with me, she hoists him up. "Get us out!" "Right." But instead of heading to the ornate library entrance, he sprints across the room, to a wall of bookshelves. He searches for a moment, looking for something, trying to remember. Then, with a grunt, he shoulders a section of shelving until it slides sideways, opening onto a narrow, sloping passage. "In!" he shouts, shoving me through. My feet fly over the steps, worn by 100 years of feet. We move in a gentle spiral, angling downward through dim light choked with dust. The walls are thick, old stone, and if anyone's following us, I certainly can't hear them. I try to gauge where we are, but my inner compass spins too quickly. I don't know this place. I don't know where we're going. I can only follow. The passage seems to dead end at a stone wall, but before I can attempt to shock my way through, Cal pushes me back. "Easy," he says, laying one hand against a stone a bit more worn than the others. Slowly, he puts an ear to the wall and listens. I hear nothing but the blood pounding in my ears and our harried breathing. Cal hears more, or rather, less. His face falls, drawn into a somber expression I can't place. It's not fear, though he has every right to be afraid. If anything, he's oddly calm. He blinks a few times, straining to hear anything beyond the wall. I wonder how many times he's done this, how many times he's snuck out of this very palace. Back then, the guards were there to protect, to serve. Now they want to kill him. "Stay on my heels," he finally whispers. "Two rights, then left the gate yard." Farley grits her teeth. "The gate yard," she seethes. "You want to make this easy for them?" "The yard is the only way out," he replies. "Ocean Hill's tunnels are closed." She grimaces, clenching a fist. Her hands are starkly empty, her knife long gone. "Any chance there's an armory between here and there?" "I wish," Cal hisses. Then he glances at me, at my hands. "We'll have to be enough." I can only nod. "We've faced worse," I tell myself. "Ready?" he whispers. My jaw tightens. "Ready." The wall moves on a central axis, revolving smoothly. We press through together, trying to keep our footsteps from echoing in the passage beyond. Like the library, this place is empty and well-furnished, dripping in lush, yellow-colored decor. All of it has an air of disuse and neglect, down to the faded golden tapestries. Cal almost lingers, staring at the color, but urges us on. Two rights, through another passage, and an odd double-ended closet. Heat radiates off Cal in waves, preparing for the firestorm he must become. I feel the same, the hairs on my arms rising with electricity. It almost crackles on the air. Voices echo on the other side of the approaching door. Voices and footsteps. Immediate left. Cal murmurs. He starts to reach for my hand, but thinks better of it. We can't risk touching each other, not now, when our touch is deadly.
You run.
Cal goes first, and the world beyond pulses with an expulsion of fire. It spreads across the massive entrance hall, over marble and rich carpet, until it crawls up the gilt walls. A tongue of flame licks up to a painting overlooking the hall, a giant portrait newly made. The new king, Maven. He smirks like a gargoyle until the fire takes hold, burning at the canvas. The heat is too much, and his carefully drawn lips begin to melt, twisting into a snarl that suits his monstrous soul. The only thing untouched by the flames are two gold banners, dusty silk, hanging from the opposite wall. Who they belong to, I don't know. The guards waiting for us flee, shouting, their flesh smoking. They're trying not to burn alive. Cal cuts through the fire, his footsteps leaving a safe path for us to follow, and Farley keeps close, sandwiched between us. She covers her mouth, trying not to breathe in the smoke. The officers who remain, nymphs or stoneskins, impervious to flame, are not so immune to me. This time lightning races, splaying from me in a too-bright webwork of living electricity. I only have enough focus to keep Cal and Farley from the storm. The rest are not so lucky. I'm a born runner, but my breath stings in my lungs. Each gasp is harder, more painful. I tell myself it's the smoke. But as I vault through the grand entrance of Ocean Hill, the pain doesn't disappear. It only changes. We're surrounded. Rows upon rows of officers in black, soldiers in gray, choke the gate yard, all armed, all waiting. "Submit to arrest, Mayor Barrow!" one of the officers shouts. A flowered vine twists around one arm while the other holds a gun. "Submit to arrest, Tiberius Calor!" He stumbles over Cal's name, still reluctant to address a prince so informally. In any other situation, I would laugh. Between us, Farley sets her feet. She has no weapon anymore, no shield, and she still refuses to kneel. Her strength is astounding. "What now?" I whisper, knowing there is no answer. Cal's eyes dart back and forth, looking for a solution he'll never find. Finally, his eyes land on me. They are so empty, and so very alone. Then, a gentle hand closes around my wrist. The world darkens, and I am squeezing through it, suffocated, confined, trapped for one long moment. Shade. I hate the sensation of teleporting, but in this moment, I relish it. Shade is all right, and we're alive. Suddenly, I'm on my knees, staring at the cobblestones of a dank alley far away from the security center, Ocean Hill, and the kill zone of officers. Someone vomits nearby. Farley, judging by the sound. I suppose teleporting and having your head bounced off a window are a bad combination. "Cal?" I ask the air, already cooling in the afternoon light. A low tremor of fear begins, the first ripple of a cold wave. But he answers from a few feet away. "I'm here," he says, reaching out to touch my shoulder. But instead of leaning into his hand, letting his now gentle warmth consume me, I pull away. With a groan, I get to my feet, only to see Shade standing over me. His expression is dark, pulled in anger, and I brace myself for scolding. I shouldn't have left him. It was wrong of me to do that. I begin the apology but never get to finish. He crushes me into an embrace, wrapping his arms around my shoulders. I cling to him just as tightly. He trembles a little, still afraid for his little sister. "I'm fine," I tell him, so quietly only he can hear the lie. "No time for that." Farley spits, forcing herself to her feet. She glances around, still off balance, but gauges our location. "Battle Gardens that way, a few streets east." "Wolliver." "Right," I nod, reaching out to hold her steady. "We can't forget our mission here, even after that deadly debacle. But I keep my eyes on Shade, hoping he knows what lies in my heart." He only shakes his head, dismissing the apology. Not because he won't accept it, but because he's too kind to want it.
"Lead on," he says, turning to Farley. His eyes soften a little, noting her dogged resolve to continue, despite her injuries and her nausea. Cal is also slow to his feet, unaccustomed to teleportation. He recovers as quickly as he can, following us through the alleyways of the city sector known as Threestone. The smell of smoke clings to him, as does a deeper rage. Silvers died back in the security center, men and women who were only following orders. His orders once. It can't be an easy thing to stomach, but he must. If he wants to stay with us, with me, he must choose his side. I hope he chooses ours. I hope I never have to see that empty look in his eyes ever again. This is a red sector, relatively safe for the time being, and Farley keeps us to twisting alleys, even pulling us through an empty shop or two to avoid detection. Security officers shout and dart over the main roads, trying to regroup, trying to make sense of what happened at the center. They're not looking for us here, not yet. They still don't realize what Shade is, how fast and far he can move us. We huddle against a wall, waiting for an officer to pass us by. He's distracted like all the others, and Farley keeps us to the shadows. "I am sorry," I mutter to Shade, knowing I must say the words. Again he shakes his head. He even butts me gently with his crutch. "Enough of that. You did what you had to. And look, I'm all right. No harm done." No harm done. Not to his body. But what about his mind? His heart? I betrayed him, my brother. Like someone else I know. I almost spit in anger, hoping to expel the thought that I have anything in common with Maven. "Where's Krantz?" I say, needing to focus on something else. "I got him away from the sea skulls, then he went his own way. Ran off like a man on fire." Shade's eyes narrow, remembering. "He buried 3 mariners in the tunnels. He's got no place here anymore." I know the feeling. "What about you?" He jerks his head, vaguely gesturing in the direction of Ocean Hill. "After all that? After almost dying? Again?" "I said I'm okay." Shade purses his lips, unsatisfied. "Right." We lapse into a stiff silence, waiting for Farley to move again. She leans heavily against the alley wall, but soldiers on when a crowd of noisy schoolchildren passes ahead. We move again, using them as a cover to cross the bigger road, before entering another maze of back streets. Finally, we duck under a low arch, or rather the others duck. I simply walk through. I'm barely to the other side when Shade stops short, his free hand reaching out to stop me from going forward. "I'm sorry, Mayor," he says, and his apology almost knocks me down again. "You're sorry?" I ask, almost laughing at the absurdity. "Sorry for what?" He doesn't answer, ashamed. A chill that has nothing to do with temperature runs through me as he steps back, allowing me to see past the mouth of the archway. There's a square beyond, clearly meant for red use. Battle garden. It's plain but well-maintained, with fresh greenery and gray stone statues of warriors all over. The one in the center is the largest, a rifle slung across his back, one dark arm extended into midair. The statue's hand points east. A rope dangles from the statue's hand. A body swings from the rope. The corpse is not naked, and wears no medallion of the Red Watch. He's young and short, his skin still soft. He was not executed long ago, probably an hour or so. But the square is clear of mourners and guards. No one is here to see him swing. Even though the sandy hair falls into his eyes, obscuring some of his face, I know exactly who this boy is. I saw him in the records, smiling out from an ID photograph. Now he will never smile again. I knew this would happen. I knew it. But that doesn't make the pain, or the failure,
any easier. He is Wolliver Galt, a new blood, reduced to a lifeless corpse. I weep for the boy I never knew, for the boy I was not fast enough to save. 16. I try not to remember the faces of the dead. Running for my life makes for an effective distraction, but even the constant threat of annihilation can't block out everything. Some losses are impossible to forget. Walsh, Tristan, and now Wolliver occupy the corners of my mind, catching like deep, gray cobwebs. My existence was their death sentence. And of course, there are the ones I've killed outright, by choice, with my own two hands. But I don't grieve for them. I can't think about what I've done, not now, not when we're still in so much danger. Cal is the first to turn his back on Wolliver's swaying body. He has his own parade of dead faces and doesn't want to add another ghost to the march. We need to keep moving. No! Farley leans hard against the wall. She presses a hand to her mouth, gulping in disgust, trying not to throw up again. Easy, Shade says, putting a steadying hand on her shoulder. She tries to wave him off, but he stands firm, watching her spit into the garden flowers. We needed to see this, he adds, burning a righteous glare at Cal and me. This is what happens when we fail. His anger is justified. After all, we sparked a firefight in the heart of Harbor Bay, wasting the last hour of Wolliver's life. But I'm too tired to let him berate me. This isn't the place for a lesson, I reply. This is a grave, and even speaking here feels wrong. We should take him down. Before I can take a step toward Wolliver's corpse, Cal hooks one arm in mine, steering me in the opposite direction. Nobody touch the body, he growls. He sounds so much like his father, it shocks me. The body has a name, I snarl when I collect myself. Just because his blood isn't your color doesn't mean we can leave him like that. I'll get him, Farley grumbles, pushing off her knees. Shade moves with her. I'll help. Stop! Wolliver Galt had a family, didn't he? Cal presses on. Where are they? He casts his free hand around at the garden, gesturing to the empty trees and shuttered windows looking down on us. Despite the distant echoes of a city marching on toward nightfall, the square is still and quiet. Certainly his mother wouldn't leave him here alone. Are there no mourners? No officers to spit on his body? Not even a crow to pick his bones? Why? I know the answer. A trap. My grip tightens on Cal's arm until my nails dig into his hot flesh, threatening to burst into flame. Horror to match my own bleeds across Cal's face as he looks not at me, but into the shadowed alleyway. Out of the corner of my eye, I catch sight of a crown, the one a foolish boy insists on wearing everywhere he goes. And then, a clicking sound, like a metallic bug snapping its pinchers, ready to devour a juicy meal. Shade, I whisper, extending my other hand toward my teleporting brother. He'll save us. He'll take us away from all of this. He doesn't hesitate. He lunges. But he never reaches me. I watch in horror as a pair of swifts catch him under either arm, slamming him back against the ground. His head cracks against stone and his eyes roll. Dimly, I hear Farley scream as the swifts speed him away, their bodies blurring. They're at the main archway before I shoot a blast of lightning in their direction, forcing them to turn back. Pain bites up and down my arm, flashing white knives of heat. But there's nothing there but my own sparks, my own strength. It shouldn't hurt at all. The clicking continues, echoing in my skull, faster with every second. I try to ignore it, try to fight. But my eyes dim, my vision spots fading in and out with every tick. What is this sound? Whatever it is, it's tearing me apart. Through the haze, I see two fires explode around me. One bright and burning, the other dark, a snake of smoke and flame.
Somewhere, Cal roars in pain.
Run, I think he says. I certainly try. I end up crawling over the cobblestones, unable to see more than a few inches in front of me. Even that is difficult. What is this? What is this? What is happening to me? Someone grabs me by the arm, their grip biting. I twist without seeing, reaching for where their neck should be. My fingers claw at armor, smoothly paneled and richly carved.
I've got her,
says a voice I recognize. Ptolemus Samos. I can barely see his face. Black eyes, silver hair, skin the color of the moon. With a shout, I pull together the strength I can and slice at him with lightning. I scream as loudly as he does, clutching my arm as fire fills my insides. No, this isn't fire. I know what it is to be burned. This is something else. A kick catches me in the stomach and I let it roll me, over and over until I'm face down in the dirt of the garden, my face scraped and bleeding. The cool scent is a momentary balm, soothing me enough to let me see again. But when I open my eyes, I want nothing more than to go blind. Maven crouches in front of me, his head tipped to one side, an inquisitive puppy with a toy. Behind him, battle rages, a very uneven one. With Shade incapacitated and me in the dirt, only Cal and Farley remain. She has a gun now, but it's little use with Ptolemus deflecting bullets at every turn. At least Cal melts whatever gets close, burning away knives and vines as fast as he can. It can't last, though. They're cornered. I almost scream. We escape one noose, only to find another. Look at me, please. Maven shifts, obstructing my view of the scene beyond. But I will not give him the satisfaction of my gaze. I won't look at him, for my own sake. Instead, I focus on the clicking sound, the one no one else seems to hear. It stabs with every passing second. He grabs my jaw and yanks, forcing me to face him. So stubborn, he tuts. One of your most intriguing qualities. Along with this, he adds, drawing a finger through the red blood on my cheek. Click. His grip tightens, sending a firework of pain through my jawbone. The clicking makes everything hurt more, hurt deeper. Reluctantly, I meet familiar blue eyes and a pointed, pale face. To my horror, he is exactly as I remember him. Quiet, unassuming, a haunted boy. He is not the maven of my nightmarish memories, a ghost of blood and shadows. He is real again. I recognize the determination in his eyes. I saw it on the deck of his father's boat as we sailed downriver to Archeon, leaving the world in our wake. He kissed my lips then and promised that no one would hurt me. I said I would find you. Click. His hand moves from my jaw to my throat, squeezing, enough to keep me silent, but not enough to stop me from breathing. His touch burns. I gasp, unable to summon enough air to scream. Maven, you're hurting me. Maven, stop. He is not his mother. He cannot read my thoughts. My vision spots again, darkening. Pinpoints of black swim before my eyes, expanding and contracting with every awful click. And I said I would save you. I expect his grip to tighten. Instead, it remains constant, and his free hand reaches for my collarbone, one blazing palm against my skin. He is scorching me, branding me. I try to scream again and barely get out a whimper. I am a man of my word. He tips his head again. When I want to be. Click, click, click. My heart tries to match the rhythm, beating at a frenzy I won't survive, threatening to explode. Stop! I manage to choke out, one hand reaching into thin air, wishing for my brother. But it is Maven who takes my hand in his, and that burns too. Every inch of me burns. That's enough, I think I hear him say, but not to me. I said, enough! His eyes seem to bleed, the last bright spots in my darkening world. Pale blue streaking across my vision, drawing jagged lines of painful ice. They surround me, caging me, I feel nothing but the burn. That's the last thing I remember before a white flash of light and sound splits my brain apart, and my entire world is pain. It's too much of everything, and strangely nothing at all. No bullets, no knives, no fists or fire or strangling green vines. This is not a weapon I've ever faced before, because it's my own. Lightning, electricity, sparks, an overload beyond even my limits. I called up a storm once before, in the bowl of bones, and it exhausted me. But this, whatever Maven has done, is killing me. Pulling me apart, nerve by nerve, splintering bone and ripping muscle. I am being obliterated inside my own skin. Suddenly I realize, is this what they felt? The ones I killed? Is this what it feels like to die by lightning? Control. It's what Julian always told me. Control it. But this is too much. I am a dam trying to hold back an entire ocean. Even if I could stop what this is, I can't find a way past my own exploding pain. I can't reach out. I can't move. I'm trapped within myself, screaming behind my teeth. I will be dead soon, and at least this will end. But it doesn't. The pain stretches on in a constant assault on every sense, pulsing but never ebbing, changing but never stopping. White spots, brighter than the sun, dance across my vision until an explosion of red squeezes them out. I try to blink it away to control something in myself, but nothing seems to happen. I wouldn't know if it did. My skin must be gone by now, scorched away by the surging bolts. Perhaps I'll be given the mercy of bleeding to death. That will be quicker than this white abyss. Kill me. The words repeat over and over. It's the only thing I can say, the only thing I want now. All thoughts of New Bloods and Maven, my brother and Cal and Killorn are gone entirely. Even the faces that haunt me, the faces of the dead, have disappeared. Funny, now that I'm dying, my ghosts decide to leave. I wish they would come back. I wish I didn't have to die alone.
17. Kill me. The words sear in my mouth, slashing past what must be a throat burned raw from screaming. I expect to taste blood. No, I expect nothing at all. I expect to be dead. But as my senses return, I realize I am not stripped bare of flesh and bone. I am not even bleeding. I am whole, though I certainly don't feel it. With a burst of willpower, I force open my eyes. But instead of Maven or his executioners, I'm met with familiar green eyes. Mare. Killorn doesn't give me a chance to catch my breath. His arms circle my shoulders, pressing me into his chest, back into darkness. I can't help but flinch at the contact, remembering the feel of fire and lightning in my bones. "It's all right," he murmurs. There's something so soothing about the way he speaks, his voice deep and shuddering. And he refuses to let me go, even when I involuntarily shrink away. He knows what my heart wants, even if my frayed nerves can't handle it. "It's over. You're all right. You're back." For a moment, I don't move, curling my fingers into the folds of his old shirt. I focus on him, so I don't have to feel myself shaking. "Back?" I whisper. "Back where?"
"Let her breathe, Killorn."
Another hand, so warm it can only be Cal's, takes my arm. He holds on tightly, the pressure careful and controlled, enough for me to focus on. It helps the rest of me swim out of the nightmare, fully returning to the real world. I lean back slowly, away from Killorn, so I can see exactly what I'm waking up to. We're underground, judging by the damp, earthy smell, but this isn't another one of Farley's tunnels. We're far out of Harbor Bay, if my electrical sense is any indication. I can't feel a single pulse, meaning we must be well away from the city. This is the safe house, dug right into the ground, camouflaged by forest and design. Red-made, no doubt. Probably used by the Scarlet Guard, and everything looks faintly pinkish. The walls and floor are packed dirt, and the slanting roof is sod, reinforced by rusted metal poles. There's no decoration. In fact, there's barely anything in here at all. A few sleeper sacks, my own included, ration packs, a switched-off lantern, and a few crates of supplies from the airjet are all I can see. My Stilts home was a palace compared to this, but I'm not complaining. I sigh in relief, happy to be out of danger and away from my blinding pain. Killorn and Cal let me blink around at the sparse room, allowing me to come to my own conclusions. They look haggard with worry, transformed into old men in the span of a few hours. I can't help but stare at their dark-circled eyes and deep frowns, wondering what wounded them in this way. Then, I remember. The light slanting in from the narrow windows is red-orange, and the air has gone cold. Night is coming. The day is over, and we have lost. Wallover Galt is dead. A new blood to Maven's slaughter. Ada, too, for all I know. I failed them both. "Where's the jet?" I ask, trying to stand. But they both reach out to stop me, keeping me firmly wrapped into my sleeper. They're surprisingly gentle, as if one touch might break me apart. Killorn knows me best, and is the first to note my annoyance. He sits back on his heels, giving me some space. He glances at Cal before begrudgingly nodding his head, allowing the prince to explain. "We couldn't fly long with you in the state you were in," he says, averting his eyes from my face. "Got a few dozen miles before you set the jet off like an overloaded light bulb. Damn near fried the thing. We had to stagger our flights and then set out on foot, hide in the woods until you were better." "Sorry," is all I can think to say, but he waves it off. "You opened your eyes, Mare. That's all that matters to me," Cal says. A wave of exhaustion threatens to take me down, and I debate letting it. But then Cal's touch moves from my arm, finding my neck. I jump at the sensation, turning to stare at him with wide, questioning eyes. But he focuses on my skin, on something there. His fingers trace strange, jagged, branching lines on my neck, reaching down my spine. I'm not the only one who notices.
"What is that?" Killorn growls. His glare would make Queen Alara proud.
My hand joins Cal's, feeling the peculiarity. Ragged streaks, big ones, winding down the back of my neck. "I don't know what it is.
They look like..."
Cal hesitates, running a finger down a particularly thick ridge. It shivers my insides.
"Scars, Mare.
Lightning scars." I pull out of his touch as quickly as I can and force myself to my feet. To my surprise, I wobble on stupidly weak legs, and Killorn is there to catch me.
"Take it easy," he chides,
never letting go of my wrists.
"What happened in Harbor Bay? What did Maven do to me? It was him, wasn't it?"
The image of a black crown burns in my mind, deep as a brand, and the new scars are just that. Brands. His marks on me.
"He killed Wallover and set a trap for us. And why do you look so pink?"
Like always, Killorn laughs at my anger, but the sound is hollow, forced, more for my benefit than his.
"Your eye,"
he says, brushing a finger over my left cheekbone.
"You burst a vessel."
He's right, I realize as I close one eye, then the other. The world is drastically different through the left tinged red and pink by swirling clouds of what can only be blood. The pain of Maven's torture did this too. Cal doesn't stand up with the rest of us, and instead leans back on his hands. I suspect he knows my knees are still shaking, and that I'll drop back down soon enough. He has a way of knowing things like that, and it makes me so very angry.
"Yes, Maven slipped into Harbor Bay," he answers, all business. He didn't make a fuss, so we wouldn't know, and he went for the first new blood he could find. I hiss at the memory. Wolliver was only 18, guilty of nothing but being born different, guilty of being like me. What could he have been? I wonder, mourning for the soldier we have lost. What ability did he wield? All Maven had to do was wait, Cal continues, and the muscle in his cheek clenches. They would have captured us all if not for Shade. He got us out, even with a concussion. It took a few jumps and too many close calls, but he came through. I exhale slowly, relieved. Is Farley all right? Shade? I ask. Cal dips his head, nodding. And I'm alive. Killorn's grip tightens. How, I don't know. I raise a hand to my collarbone and the skin beneath my shirt twinges with pain. While the rest of my nightmare, the other horrors inflicted on my body are gone, Maven's brand is very real. It was painful. What did it do to you? Cal asks, causing Killorn to sneer. Her first words in 4 days were, kill me, in case you've forgotten, he snaps, though Cal doesn't flinch. Of course whatever that machine did was painful. The clicking sound. A machine? I blanch, looking between the two young men. Wait, 4 days? I've been out for that long? 4 days asleep, 4 days of nothing. Panic chases away all my lingering thoughts of pain, shooting through my veins like icy water. How many died while I was trapped in my own head? How many hang from trees and statues now? Please tell me you haven't been babysitting me all this time. Please tell me you've been doing something. Killorn laughs. I would consider keeping you alive a very big something. I mean, I know what you mean, he retorts, finally putting a little distance between us. With what little dignity I have left, I sit back down on the sleeper and fight the urge to grumble. No, Mare, we haven't just been sitting around. Killorn turns to the wall, leaning against the packed earth so he can see out the window. We're doing quite a bit. They kept hunting. It isn't a question, but Killorn nods anyways. Even Nyx? The little bull comes in handy, Cal says, touching the shadow of a bruise on his jaw. He knows Nyx's strength firsthand. And he's quite good at the convincing part. Ada, too. Ada, I say, surprised at the mention of what should be another new blood corpse. Ada Wallace? Cal nods. After Krantz slipped the sea skulls, he got her out of Harbor Bay, lifted her right from the governor's mansion before Maven's men stormed the place. They were waiting at the jet when we got there. As happy as I am to hear of her survival, I can't help but feel a sting of anger. So you threw her right back to the wolves. Her and Nyx both. My fist clenches around the fuzzy warmth of my sleeper, trying to find some comfort. Nyx is a fisherman. Ada's a housemaid. How could you put them in such terrible danger? Cal lowers his eyes, shamed by my scolding. But Killorn chuckles at the window, turning his face into the waning light of sunset. It bathes him in deep red, as if he's been coated in blood. It's just my wounded eye playing tricks, but still the sight gives me chills. His laughter, his usual dismissal of my fears, frighten me most of all. Even now the fish boy takes nothing seriously. He'll laugh his way into his grave. Something funny to you? You remember that duckling Gisa brought home? He replies, catching us all off guard. She was 9, maybe, and took it from its mother. Tried to feed it soup. He cuts himself off, trying to smother another chuckle. You remember, don't you, Mare? Despite his smile, his eyes are hard and pressing, trying to make me understand. Killorn, I sigh. We don't have time for this. But he continues on, undaunted, pacing. It wasn't long until the mother came. A few hours, maybe, until she was circling around the bottom of the house, her other ducklings in tow. Made a real racket. All the quacking and squawking. Bree and Trainee tried to run it off, didn't they?
I remember just as well as Killorn does, watching from the porch while my brothers threw rocks at the mother bird. She stood firm.